Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lakeen. I'm doing a series of interviews focused on strategies for progressives called What Do We Do Now? We face having Trump as president, Republican control of the U.S. House and Senate, and Republicans controlling half the state governments. Republicans have the votes to push their agenda through Congress. Unfortunately, their agenda includes attacks on Obamacare, Social Security, Medicare and Medicaid, a woman's right to choose, climate action, and more. All are at risk. Moreover, the foundations of our democracy itself are under attack, with Russians interfering in our elections and pushing fake news, a president hostile to freedom of the press, and Republicans actively working to suppress the vote. So what do we do now? Today, we have two guests to help us think about strategies for action to protect programs we value and indeed protect our democracy itself. Our guest for the first half hour is Heather Booth, one of the leading progressive strategists in the United States and the founder of the Midwest Academy, which trains progressive organizers. Our guest for the second half hour will be Judy Hertz, Executive Director of the Midwest Academy. Heather Booth has been an organizer for over 40 years, starting in the civil rights and women's movement. She was the founding director and is now president of the Midwest Academy, a leading center that trains social change leaders and organizers. She's been involved in and managed many political campaigns and was the training director for the Democratic National Committee. She's been a consultant to many social change and political groups, including MoveOn.org, the Alliance for Citizenship, the largest coalition for immigration reform. She was the director of the Campaign for Financial Reform that won the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and coordinated the coalition around marriage equality around the first Supreme Court decision on marriage. She is now working to elect Keith Ellison for chair of the Democratic National Committee. Heather Booth, welcome back to All Together Now.
Eleanor, it is a joy to be with you. You've been a lifelong activist, progressive, visionary, and those listening in are of like-minded, and it keeps us moving and keeps this movement, especially now when we need a resistance and a commitment of people to organize for change.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head, as you always do. And I want to dive into your ideas on how we resist and how we organize for social change in this environment. But I want to start first by congratulating you on the recent movie that was made about your life. For our listeners, there's a movie about Heather recently released. It's called Heather Booth, Changing the World. And I am delighted that your important work is being recognized and documented. And I'd like to start by asking you, what do you think people can learn from your life and the movie that can help us right now?
By the way, if people would like to see a two-minute clip of this movie, there's a website. If you just go to Heather Booth, the film, no WW or anything else, just Heather Booth, the film. There's a place you can then click on and see a two-minute version of a trailer. And a reason that I agreed to be part of this movie, made by a remarkable progressive filmmaker named Lily Rivlin, very accomplished, is because I thought people would need to see a film that encourages people to organize and says, if we organize, we can change the world, but only if we organize. That complaining alone, that even protesting alone, even standing alone, is not enough. And we need to join with others. And we can, and we will, make the important changes that are needed. If you ask me to talk briefly about my life background and sort of bring it up to date, was that what you were asking?
You exactly what I wanted. That the film is about the importance of organizing, and
yes,
that is how we change the world. And if we ever thought the Lone Ranger would be, you know, riding into Dodge at noon to save the country, that is not the mode that's going to get us where we need to be. We really need to be banding together now. And
It is a very difficult time. In some ways, maybe one of the most difficult, terrifying, perilous political, social, economic times in my lifetime. And I'm 70 years old and have been doing this for since I was a teenager. It's so difficult because, just as you say, that all of the major levers of power are in the hands of people who really are serving themselves and not the rest of the public, so that families will be divided and people will end up in jail who haven't committed crimes, and women will have health care threatened, and LGBTQ people will have reason to fear what their future holds. There'll be an abuse of power from Wall Street to what used to be the Justice Department and FBI, CIA, just so many areas. Climate deniers in charge of our energy and environmental policies. Today, there are hearings on these votes on health care. People may lose the health care they have. So that it is a difficult time. But I do think that there are ways to look at joining together and finding a way out.
Exactly. And what do you think, you know, drawing on your lifetime experience, and, you know, as you say, this is the time we need to organize, and you are one of the leading organizers in the country. In fact, you set up a whole institute to train people on organizing. What do you think some of the principles are that can guide us through all these turbulent times?
Right. Well, for now, particularly when the shock of this new era is upon us and the inauguration is about to come on, one, I do think we need to support each other and know that we are really in it together and that we are with each other. No one will be left behind. I sometimes call it a Spartacus moment. People may remember the story of Spartacus, who was a slave in the Roman times, the Roman Empire, and he led a slave revolt. And then the Romans came after him and threatened the community and said, "Give us Spartacus or we will have, there'll be retribution." And said to the other slaves, "Who is Spartacus?" And one after another, each slave stood up, raised their hand, and said, "I am Spartacus."
Oh, that's beautiful.
"I am Spartacus. I am Spartacus." In other words, saying, "I am Muslim. I am immigrant. I am LGBTQ. I am women seeking health care. I'm unions. We are all of us in this together. And it is not just one turning on each other, but we need to stand together." So that's, I think, the first principle. The second is we need to hold not only Trump, but his gang of thieves that are coming into power, both federally and in many states. We have to hold them accountable. They've laid out their plans, and many of them, if not almost all of them, are not in the interest, even of the people who voted for them, but not in the interest of the American public. And so we need to expose, promote, engage people in seeing how, in fact, he's not serving their interests, but in financial areas, serving the interests of Wall Street that caused the financial meltdown. The area of health care or Social Security or Medicare, a number of the people that he's brought in with him, and Paul Ryan in the House, they're about slashing what people will have for aid in their, if they're disabled or in their older years, and to many children even who face, who also use the benefits of these programs. So the second principle is holding those in power accountable and exposing who they really serve. The third principle, and if we do that, by the way, there's a history of winning when people do that. In 2004, when Bush was elected, the first legislative initiative that he tried was an attempt to privatize Social Security. But because people organized and stopped him, by 2006, the House went Democratic, and by 2008, the presidency, House, Senate, was all Democratic. You can build a resistance and organize to win, even when it seems very difficult situations. The third element is that we do need to organize. Now, that means going into the communities, connecting with people, talking but listening, hearing what people are saying, finding the ways to connect, and building to last. It's a key thing that the Midwest Academy teaches, as well as the kind of mobilization and holding those in power accountable. And then the fourth thing is that you have to drive those issues into the elections. So it's standing together, it's holding those in power accountable and running campaigns on that, organizing and moving the issues into the elections. And I think if we do that, it's not just a question of will we win, but it just is a question of when.
Right. I think that's a wonderful framework for us, certainly for the foreseeable future until there's a power shift in the elections. And I find it very interesting. You talk about resistance, and right off the bat, we say with the top of the hour, what do we do now? And you said resistance and organize for social change. There is so much of the attacks, as you talked about, coming down, and we're going to need to resist some of the worst of it. And, you know, I discovered recently this new tool, which is a guidebook for how to impact Congress called Indivisible, written by congressional staffers. So I was excited to find it because I think so many people feel that what they think or do doesn't really matter, that they can't impact their member of Congress or what's happening there because, you know, we're Democrats, they're Republicans, or, you know, for it's just like this huge gulf between so many people and their representatives. But that guidebook called Indivisible, I thought, was a very good breakthrough to show exactly how ordinary citizens can make a difference. And in fact, that guidebook has already been used. You remember the first law out of the gate that the new Republican-controlled Congress tried to do was to undermine the Office of Congressional Ethics. And within one day, they had to turn that around and reinstate the Office of Congressional Ethics because they had an uproar from citizens and citizens who have been guided by this book, Indivisible. So I just wanted to make sure our listeners are aware that we can make a difference and that that guidebook is downloadable from the website there. Just look under Indivisible and you'll see it.
Yes, it's really a helpful tool. When I passed it on to others. It was put together by a number of congressional staffers, so it's particularly about what legislators and legislative staff listen to, how effective are different tools and techniques and approaches. And the thing that's the most important is actually going to see legislators in groups, pulling others together, and actually arranging for the face-to-face meeting, telling your stories, speaking with a righteous indignation, especially if the base that you bring in is a base that they are concerned about. So it's not just all the Democrats talking to the Republicans, but it's the people who are part of that member's own voting base. And that's where organizing comes in. So Indivisible, in many ways, it's related to that. You need that organizing to go with it. And then it talks about, you know, maybe important, but on the scale less effective might be going in as an individual, not with a group. Then a letter, a personal letter, a handwritten letter, a form letter, and then the online efforts. Phone calls matter, and the number of phone calls matter. The one thing, and there's another benefit of the book, and that is the booklet online, and that it lists a number of organizations you can go to that are doing these kinds of activities.
Mm-hmm.
The two thoughts, though, that I'd add to it, and this is the kind of addition that the Midwest Academy explains and embraces. One is it talks about the impact of each of these as if they're on their own, when in fact, all the tools functioning together can form a campaign. And so they, what feels like isolated actions, join together and become more like a movement thrust. And so an online petition showing the breadth of support and then giving us the names of people we can follow up with, doing those phone calls, having in the street-based visible activity, and then having meetings both inside and visibility events outside, all of that combined into a campaign, again, with, I mentioned, with the organizing of the political base. And so those are two things I'd add to the great benefit that I think Indivisible provides.
That's a great addition. I hope you contact the authors of Indivisible and have them include that in. That's really vital. And speaking of organizing, we have a major movement happening next week. The day after the inauguration, we got this Women's March on Washington coming. And I'm just astonished at how many women are excited about this and mobilizing. I've had my sister-in-law, who has not generally been very politically active, is coming down from New Hampshire, and people coming from all over. What do you think about this Women's March on Washington? Do you think
I think it's terrific, and I'll be there with friends and relatives, and there's many things going on. First of all, if anyone wants to get in touch with it, you can go to, there's a quite a robust and website with a lot of information on women's, I'm just going to check it right now, womensmarch.com, if you go to that website. www.womensmarch.com. And just trying to see if that opens it up. Yes. In addition to the march in D.C., there are also marches and visibility events in many of the states, and there's a listing of all those states and state contacts. If you are coming to D.C., in addition to the march itself, which will be a bold statement of people from many different backgrounds with some highly visible names and personalities, there'll be Gloria Steinem and Harry Belafonte are co-chairs of the march, but there'll be both prominent people and people whose names we never heard of but speak from the heart about their own experience. In addition to the march itself, though, there are a number of teach-ins in D.C. If you're in the D.C. area, and I think some other states are doing this too. And from 1:30 till I think 6, there are teach-ins at All Souls Church in D.C. And also in the church next door. But if you go to All Souls Church from 1:30 on, there'll be teach-ins on a variety of subjects from healthcare and civil rights, women's rights, environmental issues, democracy itself. And then there'll also be a one-hour session where people are meeting in subgroups by state or by region so that they'll be given some guidance about how to go home and take these activities home with you. So the march is not an end, but just a beginning. And there are other activities going on. By the way, if you're in the D.C. area, and Eleanor, is your listing base more D.C. or is it a national base?
It's national.
Oh, great. And there are activities all around and all over. I was going to mention Planned Parenthood is having an all-day training session the next day, at least in D.C. And then on the 14th, there are two different demonstrations. One that's sponsored by the National Action Network and the NAACP, going from the Washington Monument to the Martin Luther King Memorial, and that's on the entire new civil rights agenda. And then later that day, there's another action that will be part of national actions around immigration reform, saying we're not invisible. We're here.
We're here, we're on the move, and we're speaking out.
Yes.
I think that's great.
So there
great.
Are actions and activities in every part of this country of people who've decided not only to resist, but to organize in order to win.
Exactly. Well, and I think this is coming out with a bang here. I think it's fabulous. The women have come and organized right on the heels of the inauguration, the very first day that Trump will be in the White House. We've got all these women descending on Washington and the satellite marches that are happening in other cities, Boston, San Francisco, L.A., they're all over. In fact, there's some internationally in solidarity. The key here, I think, is once we're together, we feel our power, feel our strength, hopefully do some of these great teach-ins and take some things to go home. But what do you think should be the focus of the women's movement now? Like, what should we be doing? I know resist and organize, but specifically for the women's movement, what do you think we should do?
Well, first of all, a women's movement has been changed into a movement for all issues becoming women's issues. So mm-hmm. The fight for 15 in a union is really led by young women of color. Black Lives Matter, again, really young women of color are the leaders of those efforts. And the same was true for issue after issue on the environment and health care, on women's rights. You see who's showing up at some of the rallies and efforts around Planned Parenthood. So there are, first of all, a vital women's movement activity, but it's often called other things. It's called mm-hmm. health care, worker rights, environmental rights. And those also are part of a women's movement. The second thing is, I'm sorry for that other call coming in. the second thing is on where the more traditional women's groups are. That also has been converted into very vital activity. On the ground, still National Organization for Women is still there. It is still out there with
it's remarkable
circulars, signs at almost every demonstration. Feminist Majority, and then there are newer organizations. Emily's List taking these issues into the election arena, mm-hmm. and then there are groups online. Moms Rising has had incredible impact, as has Ultraviolet. So whether it's on the ground, online, whether it's on traditional issues or on a whole host of new issues, an array of issues, the women's movement is also rising. And I think we'll see increased empowerment, even in this time when there's a pushback on so many of the specific rights that women have won and now need to defend.
Exactly right. For all the challenges we're facing, I think it's going to be a remarkable moment in history, I think in part because women are and will continue to rise to the challenge here. So that's all very encouraging. You know, we talked a little bit about the importance of organizing and about the Midwest Academy, which you founded. So it seems to me, you know, here we have a time when organizing has never been more important. And you have created this amazing institute that focuses on organizing, the Midwest Academy. Can you explain for our listeners, you know, why did you start the Midwest Academy and what has it done since you started it, and what do you see that it can do now in this current era of challenge?
Great, great questions. And those who are interested, you can go to the website of Midwest Academy. It's www.midwestacademy.com. And it's trained thousands of people in many fields, from civil rights issues, women's issues, health care. If you name just an issue, grassroots organizing, environment, all of those are trained so frequently by people who've been through the training at Midwest Academy. There are many things that came together. The Academy was started in 1973. The money I used for starting the Academy came when I had been fired from a job I had because I stood up for other employees who had come together, and we said we needed some rights on the job and tried to form a union. I was fired, and then 2.5 years later, I won a back pay case against the employer. And with that money, and deciding I'd never be fired again, and haven't been, I started the
Congratulations.
But there's also another theme, was that there had been another center that was training organizers, and they had said, women can't be organizers. And I thought, well, that doesn't sound right. And so I decided
That's ridiculous.
To start this training. And it's also why the first class in the training was for women organizers. And many of the great leaders of the early women's movement, many dynamic leaders, were in that first class. And then we expanded out. We now train women, men, young, old, all kinds of people around the country. And the Academy is really based on three principles. I know Judy Hertz, who's the current director of the Academy, is going to be on, and we'll talk some about this and may even repeat some of the principles of the Academy, but they deserve repeating. There are three key principles for teaching how you build large-scale social organization and movements. The first is that you focus on issues that are actually going to win improvements in people's lives. So as important as issues are of principles of freedom and justice, it's important to take those values and that vision, and based on those values and vision, build for concrete demands, ways that people's lives will be improved. More money in their pocket, their streets will be cleaned up, the kids can actually walk to school with safety. The second is that we give people a sense of their own power, that it's not the power and privilege of those in power that allow us to win. It's because people organize. We tell our stories. We take action. We find our voice. We stand up. And the third is that we begin to change the relations of power. We find ways to make those in power more accountable to us. So those are the principles behind the Academy. For those who are interested in it also, and Judy may mention this, there's a, in addition to the website, www.midwestacademy.com, there's a manual from the Academy, and you can buy it in a progressive bookstore. You also can get it on Amazon. And it's called Organizing for Social Change. And the three authors are Bobo, Kendall, and Max. And they were three of the wonderful trainers of the Academy over time, Kim Bobo, Jackie Kendall, and Steve Max.
That sounds great. And, you know, I'm just so grateful to you, not only for all the amazing work you do and the incredible strategic sensibility and humanity and effectiveness that you bring to all the areas that you touch, but that you have created this resource for us, the Midwest Academy, which helps to train people in these principles. And, you know, we need it now more than ever. So I'm deeply grateful to you for all that you've done and all that you continue to do, and particularly kind of your living legacy with the Midwest Academy. So thank you so very much.
And Eleanor, I thank you, both this program, but also just how you've lived your life and the involvement that you've had in so many other issues. Thank you for being such a wonderful example, a sister and a partner in these struggles.
Oh, wonderful. Thanks so much, Heather. Thanks for your show, and look forward to having you on again soon.
Appreciate it very much.
Our next guest is Judy Hertz, the executive director of the Midwest Academy that we've been speaking about, the leading national training institute for the progressive movement for social justice. Judy, are you there?
Yes. Hello, Eleanor. Great to be with you.
Hello. Welcome to All Together Now.
Thank you.
So Heather just gave an amazing, wonderful interview laying out some strategic guidance for progressives in the current challenging era. And Heather told us some about why she started the Midwest Academy and all, but if you could just talk a little bit, you have been involved in the Academy for many years, and you're now the executive director of it. If you could explain to our listener in your words, what is the Midwest Academy and what does it do?
Yes. Well, the mission of the Midwest Academy is to train organizers and activists for the progressive movement to help build infrastructure for the progressive movement. And infrastructure means we need a lot of people on the ground who have strategic abilities and abilities to put together action and to recruit other people, and that we need, in addition to people, we need strong organizations. And so we provide training and consulting to build that kind of infrastructure for the progressive movement across a wide variety of issues. And our name is a little bit deceptive. We're called the Midwest Academy, but we actually work from coast to coast and beyond. We're sending a trainer to Alaska in a couple of weeks, and so we're national despite the name.
Yes, that's terrific, and we need you nationally, so thank you for being there. And so say if one of our listeners wanted to go to the Midwest Academy, do you have ongoing? Is it like once a year? And when, or do you go, move it around and take it to different places in the country?
So if listeners are interested, they should go to the website, which Heather talked about, MidwestAcademy.com, and go to the training page. And five or six times a year, we have a five-day training session, which is a very good introduction to the fundamental skills of being an organizer. It's also great for people who've been doing organizing for a while and want a refresher, or they've been doing organizing for a while by the seat of their pants. And anyway, it's a great place to come and be in a room full of people. We typically have 35 to 50 people at a time. Most people are from organizations, because one of the things that the Midwest Academy is very passionate about is that we can be most effective if we're building powerful, progressive organizations that are going to be around for the long haul and that can be building a strong base of progressive activists. But we also have individual activists who come through the training. So if you go to the website, you'll see the training dates, and we are coast to coast. We're going to be in about 2 weeks. We're going to be in Austin, Texas. In March, we'll be in Los Angeles. April, back in Chicago in August, and then back to Austin in the fall, and then Baltimore, Washington area in November. So wherever you are in the country, we won't be too far away. And
right,
the other thing that we do is we provide consulting for organizations. So if an organization wants help in developing a strategic plan or getting its organizing staff to the next level or figuring out a better recruitment plan or building a coalition, designing an issue campaign that will be effective, we send consultants out all the time to help organizations with that kind of thing.
Yeah, it sounds fabulous. And how did you yourself get involved in organizing? Because you were a community organizer in Chicago for 20 years and then joined the Academy. So what does organizing mean to you? Why has it attracted you, and you've dedicated your life to it now for decades?
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up in a progressive family. My parents actually were involved in Planned Parenthood in the 1940s. My father was very involved in the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s and many other things. So I grew up in an atmosphere of social justice and activism and taking responsibility for making the world a better place. I didn't really quite know what I wanted to do with that, and colleges and universities aren't too great at telling you about careers in social justice. They're pretty good at heading you to law school, but so it took me a while, and I kind of looked around, and I eventually did a field placement in a community organization, and had an interesting experience. I was organizing a group of people on a block to go and meet with a realtor, and this was a fairly conservative neighborhood. This was in the 1980s, and all of the men ended up assigning themselves all the speaking roles, and all the women, were kind of serving coffee and tea and cookies. And I was very shy growing up, so I was just watching this. I was supposed to be organizing it, but I knew I couldn't give any big feminist lectures, so I'm just watching this dynamic happen here and not saying too much. But on the day that I was supposed to drive these people from the neighborhood to the realtor's office, we met in a church parking lot, and none of the men who had taken on the speaking roles showed up in the church parking lot, and all of the women were there.
And so the men were doing the talking and the women were doing the work.
Exactly. But the women were terrified, and they said, oh, we can't go to the realtor's office. We don't know what we don't have our leaders. And that was the moment that I was able to bring all of my background and somehow find it within me to say, oh, let's talk about this for a minute. Yeah, the men were going to do the talking, but I think we could probably handle this ourselves. And mm-hmm. I talked the group of women into going ahead with the action, going to the realtor's office, asking him to sign a letter of agreement not to do some bad practices. And to make a long story short, the women went, the realtor signed the letter, and I watched their self-image being transformed in front of my eyes.
Wow.
They didn't think they could do this, right? And I
including
watched
you.
Myself at the same time be transformed because I didn't know that I could do it either.
Right, and this something that, about you stepping into your own power then
exactly.
gave them permission and freedom and support for them to step into their power too.
Exactly, exactly. And me seeing them step into their power, you know, gave me the ability to do it. So that was kind of the aha moment of my career. And I said, boy, sign me up. This is
right.
what I need to be doing.
If this is organizing, I'm in.
Yep, exactly.
That's fabulous. And, of course, I have to ask you, since you've worked as a community organizer in Chicago for 20 years before going to the academy, which is also based in Chicago, did you run into Barack Obama when he was a community organizer?
I think every organizer of a certain age in Chicago probably has. But, yes, I ran into him. I don't know him well. I've met him a number of times, but I don't really know him. But, yes, mm-hmm. and everyone was impressed with his skills. And, you know, I think that he has brought a sensibility and an understanding that change needs to come from the bottom, that, you know, most presidents don't have that community experience that he has.
Right. Well, I found it fascinating watching his farewell address this week when he really said, you know, after this lifelong kind of, you know, doing the community organizing and then in government service all the way up to president for 8 years, and now he's at the end of that, that he's really saying, really, it all comes back to organizing. It comes back to you, the citizen, to we, the people, working together to make changes. And I think he's going to be leaving the White House and becoming an organizer again.
If only everybody had that same understanding. Yeah.
Well, I think it's an understanding that's out there. You've got it, Heather's got it, and you're training people in it.
Yes.
I just think it's so incredibly important. I mean, it's always been important, but incredibly important now.
Yes. Yes.
What you're doing.
That's
and,
right.
I feel a little jealous that I kind of got thrown into working as a campaign manager and to run a citywide campaign in Boston. I had never been involved in a campaign in my life, and I had never been trained in organizing in my life, and here I was running this citywide campaign, 640,000 people in the city. So I would like to come to one of your training sessions, because I think I need it, and even if you've learned something you might have missed, had some gaps, get a refresher and bone up for the times ahead here.
Yeah, and we would love to have you, and we do have a steady number of people who've been doing this for a long time, and they want to get a refresher. They want a time to think about what they're doing. So, yeah, it functions really well for people either early on in their career, mid-career, at any point.
Yeah, that's great. And say I show up, or one of our listeners enrolls in the academy. What are some of the key things? Like, by the end of the program, what will we have learned that we can use when we come back home?
Yes. So, good question. So, the first thing really is a deeper understanding of power, what it is, what it takes to make a change in social policy, how the people who make policy, our elected officials, how they think about it. So we have a tendency in the progressive world to think that we need to pile up a lot of facts, right? We do more research and we'll convince people somehow with the brilliance of our facts, or we'll preach to them about the morality of a position, you know, healthcare is a human right, you know, and then we'll pile up some facts. 20 million people are covered. And then we'll tell some stories about individuals. And all of those things are good, and all of those things are really important. But at the end of the day, they're not necessarily the things that persuade that member of Congress to vote yes or no on a specific piece of legislation. So we focus a lot in the first part of the week on what's going on in a member of Congress's mind. They want to be reelected. They're thinking about votes. They want to hear from, as Heather, I think, said earlier, they want to hear from specific people in their district. They don't want to just hear from, you know, some global person who's piling up a bunch of facts or piling up a bunch of stories. What are their voters thinking? Are their voters going to vote them out? Will there be any consequences for them if they don't vote the way people are asking them to vote? So we discuss power, and we discuss the idea that being right is good, but not enough. And then we train people to analyze who's the specific decision maker that you need to go after to get the outcome that you want. Where did they get their power? Who voted for them? Who gave them money? Who do you know that lives in their district? And then we try to help people drill in, and specifically in a given district. I've led strategic sessions where the people in the room have said to me in the beginning of the session, oh, Judy, you want us to find people in Congress and so-and-so's district, but we don't know anybody there, and we can't find anyone there. And at the end of 2 hours, I've managed to pull out of them, well, what about this kind of connection? What about that kind of? You work with homeless people. There must be churches or social service agencies you could connect to on the basis of your interest in homelessness, who you could find in that district. Or you're working on daycare. You should be able to find some people in that district you can connect with that way. So figuring out how to find the people in the right places, what are the right places? Because as I think you and Heather were discussing earlier, the indivisible.
Right, the guidebook to impacting members of Congress.
Exactly. And so one of the things we talk a great deal about is members of Congress want to hear from people in their own district. So how do you find those people? How do you get those people activated? So basically, we're teaching the lessons of thinking about power strategically, and then how to build a campaign, how to talk about the issue that you want to win on, how to narrow it down from I'm really concerned that people don't have health care to will Representative X vote the correct way on this particular bill, right? How do we get it down to the nitty-gritty, and how do I find the people from their district who will call them? How do I build that into a strategic campaign? When we take action, how do we take action in a strategic way that shows the kind of in-district power that makes the member of Congress nervous? A couple years ago, every year we give awards at the end of the year, and a couple years ago we gave an award to Congressman Barney Frank as he was retiring.
Which,
and
by the way,
that he said that I'll never forget.
So our listeners know, I've been to the Midwest Academy Annual Awards, and they call it the Academy Awards,
yes,
which I love. It's like the Academy Awards for progressives, and it's really fun.
Yeah.
So go ahead. What happened with Barney Frank?
So we're giving an Academy Award to Congressman Barney Frank, and he said, people come up to me all the time and say, Congressman, what can we do to impact members of Congress? They don't seem to care about anything we say. And Barney Frank said that, he said, I don't know a single member of Congress who isn't terrified of their constituents. It's just that they never hear from them. Right? So all the things that Heather was mentioning that are in the indivisible document, call your member of Congress. Write a personal letter to your member of Congress. Show up at their office. The in-district activity is... you know, even more valuable, I think, than activity in the Capitol. So getting really specific. So what we train people over the course of the five-day session to think about power, what it means, how it can be used, to go beyond the idea that being right is enough, then to get really clear about what issues you're trying to win on, what are the concrete outcomes you're looking for, how to put together an issue campaign, how to build an organization, and how to then show the power to the decision maker in such a way that the decision maker is going to feel that there will be consequences if they don't do what you're asking them to do. This is one of the things that I think the Tea Party did very effectively. They drilled in electorally in districts and made elected representatives feel like they were going to be in big trouble if they didn't do what they were being asked to do. And I think as progressives, we sometimes stay at the level of piling up data or talking about the values and the morality or telling stories. And all of those things are good, and they're very important, and they help us recruit and build our own base. But when we communicate with elected officials, we need to be thinking about the underlying power as well.
Exactly. Well, it sounds like a fabulous program, and I can't wait to go. So for our listeners who are interested or might know somebody who's interested, you can learn more about it on the MidwestAcademy.com. Is that the best way to connect in?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That is the best way, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, you're training every one of us to be kind of an empowered, our own center of power and our own strategic center for strategic change.
Yes, exactly. And let me also say that the training, the 5 days together, are fun and inspiring. We do a lot of role-playing, which is really fun, gets people trying out the things, the tools that we're teaching. Put them into practice, debrief it, see how it went. You're also in a room with other wonderful activists on a wide variety of issues and from a broad array of states and, you know, cities and rural areas and, you know, it's just a great experience. It's really energizing.
Totally, and then you've had some amazing people who come in and out of your program. Tell us a little bit. I've met some of your graduates, like Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky from the Chicago area. So members of Congress. Who else are some of your graduates?
Okay, that's a good question. So we have actually graduates throughout the progressive movement, the labor movement. There's just a huge number. John Stocks, who's the executive director of the National Education Association. Jen Brown, who was very active in the Obama campaign, and I'm forgetting the title, but then she went to Texas and was the head of Battleground Texas, trying to build the progressive electoral forces there. I'm the minute you ask me to start naming names, I'm going to feel bad about. I'm never going to be able to get through all of them. But
the fellow from Connecticut who was Secretary of State there, and Miles Rapaport, he then went on to become the head of the head of the blanking on the group in the Citizens Democracy group that he ran here, Common Cause in Washington D.C.
Right. Just about anywhere that you go in the progressive organizing world, both in labor, in community organizations, national organizations, as well as in progressive electoral work, you'll run into Midwest Academy alumni. I had the experience of going to a conference where I didn't really think I knew very many people, and sitting down at dinner the first night, and as we were doing introductions around the table, it turned out that of eight people at the table, six of them were Midwest Academy alums.
Oh, wow.
We have a tool, the Midwest Academy Strategy Chart, which is a tool that we teach at the five-day training, which is a really concrete way to do power analysis and put together a really effective issue campaign. I sat down at this table that night. Turned out six of these people were alums, and they immediately started demanding, where is the strategy chart app for our cell phones?
Oh, that's great. And what a great community of people to be connected with. Do you systematically keep in touch with your alumni? Do you get together at all in places, or do you just kind of connect around different campaigns as you move forward in the work?
You know, we haven't connected as much as we'd like. So if anybody who's listening is a Midwest Academy alum, send me some email. I love to connect, and we love to keep people together. We haven't had a systematic way of doing it, but we're looking at trying to improve that.
Yeah, what a great resource that would be in helping each other in the work.
Yes.
And I'm also wondering, the work of the Midwest Academy has always been important in terms of the organizing, never more important than now. Has the current election changed the work of the Midwest Academy in any way, and if so, how?
You know, I think really just made it more urgent that we all get to scale and really thinking about how do we go from, I started out in neighborhood organizing in Chicago, you know, and how do we go from neighborhood organizing to something that can have an impact in a city the size of Chicago, and how do we take that from having an impact at the city level to having an impact in an ongoing way at the state level? What do you have to do to be effective? And we have a lot of effective organizations that we know about and work with that are statewide. And then how do you be effective nationally? And so thinking about the scale and how do we take what we're doing to the scale that we need to be at in order to win these days. So we're up against, you know, the Koch brothers. We're up against giant corporations. We're up against, you know, billions of dollars, right? We're up against ExxonMobil. So we have to think about how the progressive movement organizes at that scale without losing its sense of personal touch and relationships and humanity, right? But being able to be effective at the same scale that our opposition is active at.
Well, that's interesting. So, yeah, because when I think about the organizing, I'm often thinking about, you know, a particular campaign to get a candidate elected to a particular office, or, you know, fighting a road coming through the community, or, you know, some discrete thing like that. But you're right, the challenge is now the Koch brothers, you know, that they just put $1 billion in this election, if not more. So how do we deal at that level with organizing? Although I love the whole images, you know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. And we can focus more on some of the images like David and Goliath, where,
yes.
You know, the giant David gets slain by little David with a slingshot.
Yes.
So
yes.
Some of those images, yes. I think, can be really helpful.
Absolutely. And we're never going to be as big as they are, and we're never going to have the money that they have. But what we do have is tens of thousands of people on the ground. And so the more progressive, thoughtful, strategic activists that we can train and have active, the better. The other thing, as you talk about, you know, an electoral campaign here, an issue campaign there, the reason that the Academy talks about building powerful organizations is that's kind of the through piece. So
mm-hmm.
you've done this campaign. You don't want to start from ground zero for the next campaign. You want to have the list of names. You want to have some leadership. You want to have the activists. You want to have the relationships. You want people with the institutional memory. Right. And so we are really strongly preaching building powerful organizations, powerfully democratically run, accountable organizations that are there over the long haul to take action and to represent people.
Well, I love that. So that's a great note to end on. And if any of our listeners are interested in going to the Midwest Academy or donating to it, you feel free, go to the MidwestAcademy.com. So that's all the time we have. Judy Hertz, Executive Director of the Midwest Academy, thank you so very much for being with us today and for all the great work you're doing.
Thank you.
In case you've missed any of these programs, they're available in the archives. If you want to learn more about Breakthrough Solutions, go to thebreakthroughway.com. If you like this program, please go to iTunes and like it there. Our theme song is Let's Give Them Something to Talk About, sung by Bonnie Raitt. I'll be back 1 week from today. Thanks for joining us. This is Eleanor LeCain with All Together Now.